Brian, why have I forced you to do this podcast with me?
I have no idea. I couldn't possibly begin to tell you. I think it's going to be a disaster.
Oh, all right. With that glowing introduction, welcome to Culture Time, where we do a deep dive into our favorite pop culture obsessions. With me is my good friend, Brian Minter, who is a fantastic writer, but he's also a bigger nerd. Brian?
Yes, I would agree with your assessment of that.
Welcome to the show.
Nah, thanks. It's nice to be here. You have a very nice setup here.
Brian, we generally fight about a lot of things, I think, but today you're on the podcast because you've got a really hot Marvel take.
I do have a hot Marvel take. Hot takes are the coin of the realm. I struggle to find one, and my hot take is that most superhero movies, Marvel, DC, and any off-brands that may come to us, are not very good.
We're in a state, I would say, for the past, Iron Man came out in about 2008, so for the past 9 years of superhero movies kind of taking over entertainment, right?
Absolutely. Well, they are not bad, and I would just like to say, lest I come across as a hater and get angry tweets, I feel about superhero movies the way Thomas Jefferson felt about his country. I criticize it because I love it and believe it can do better.
Okay.
So let me be clear that I'm not hating on these things. I just, the point we were talking about earlier, there is a uniform, blandness to all these movies. They're very anodyne in a deliberate way, right? Like, because they're these huge cultural products, they're not just movies, they can't afford to be anything but bland. Like, if we all got together, if we got five of our friends together and said, we're going to all order ice cream, but we have to agree on one flavor, we would end up with vanilla, because whatever interesting flavor somebody wanted, somebody else would not want.
Okay, so let me back you up, right? Let me back you up to say I think the first Iron Man movie came out in 2008.
I think that is an excellent starting point for the superhero movies we're talking about.
Okay, so that's we're jumping off with Iron Man 2008. And if you look at that in a vacuum without anything else that has happened, it's a perfectly serviceable movie, right?
It's great. It's great. I've seen it many times.
And then this is where your problem starts to happen is that they don't really change, right? There is... what is your big critique with Iron Man, you would say, then?
All right, so Iron Man... And Iron Man is probably the best... One of the best of the bunch, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if someone said... Like, I saw the Wonder Woman movie not long ago, and a couple people were like, oh, is that great? Should we see it? It's like, it is great for a superhero movie. And I would say the same thing about, certainly, the first Iron Man. For a superhero movie, it's great. It's well-acted. The special effects are fantastic. The movie industry is putting all their resources into these movies, so they're technically fantastic, which is why it is fun to watch.
So when does it start to fall apart for you?
It starts to fall apart for me almost immediately.
Okay.
And you don't, in retrospect, I think this is much clearer, but what these movies are doing, they're not setting out to tell stories, right? Like, and I'm not complaining about them because they're not art films, right? Like, if I look at the movies that I think they're most like from maybe my youth, it's Ghostbusters and Raiders of the Lost Ark and, entertainment movies, adventure movies.
Right. You're not doing a high art, low art comparison.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm not saying that they're not, I can't even think of an art film. That's why, that's how much I'm not saying that. Where they start to fall apart is now that Marvel and DC and these studios have invested, and whoever makes the X-Men movies, which I would say is a third stream, now that they've invested so much into this being their product, they can't afford to alienate the market. They can't afford to have any character change or die or face any consequences because they need the character around for the next movie. And each individual filmmaker, their primary goal isn't to tell a story. It's to have the latest entry in the brand, right? They have to set up the characters and the plots for the next movie. They have to include this character for merchandising, or even in some cases so that the company retains the IP for that character, all of which is completely antithetical to telling a good story, right? Like, you're a great storyteller. I've heard you can captivate a group of people with a good story.
Isn't that nice?
It is nice. It's true. I've seen it many times. But if you layered on, and that's not a movie, right? You'd have to layer on a lot of technical expertise to make a great movie out of your story, but there's a good story at the heart of it.
Right.
And for all these superhero movies, the story is just one of the many technical elements you throw in there.
Okay, so my problem with this, I have two questions. One is that the producers for the Marvel movies, and I don't know how to say the guy's name, Kevin Feige, I think,
Feige.
Okay, so you know more than I do. So Kevin Feige, right? He is largely credited for being able to pull the universe together.
Yeah, he's like the showrunner for the Marvel Universe.
So what you were saying...
Or the brand manager, if you will.
So what you were saying is that instead of it being... instead of there being, cohesiveness, you're saying that there really is just no artistic freedom. The other problem, though, is that they're based off of the comic books. What are they really supposed to do with these characters that have existed for like 20, 30 plus years?
Yeah, totally. And that's the comics are different. I was a comics fan for many, many years. Mm-hmm. But the comics suffer from the same problem on a much smaller scale. Like, you can't kill Batman. You can't have Batman retire. You can't have Batman change. Batman has been doing Batman stuff. He's been Batmaning around for, since 1949? Whenever Batman came into being. So he's done everything Batman could possibly do, and he's still out there Batmaning. He's never changed. Which is the same problem the movies face now, right? They're just at a much, much larger scale. We cannot fundamentally change Batman in any way, which can be interesting, and I would argue, as I mentioned earlier, that the Nolan films, I think, are an exception to this rule. I think that the Christopher Nolan said, here's a character everybody knows, here's a cultural touchstone. He's basically like the John Henry of modern culture. Like, my mom knows who Batman is.
Right.
She's never read a Batman comic, but she knows that his parents are dead. And she knows, I don't know, whatever the other Batman touchstones are. Let me get back to my point. Where was I going? Oh, right, the Nolan films. So the Nolan films, I think he took this Batman character everybody knows and thought of a way to tell a good story about that character.
Mm-hmm.
And made it $1 billion. So it's not that I'm opposed to them making money off of these things. But all the other Batman films that we're going to get, we're just going to see Batman being thrown into these situations over and over again and never changing and never growing and never really learning anything about him.
Wow. I don't know if I agree with any of that. Like, well, we're going to push Batman to later because I'm still want to talk about the Marvel stuff, right? Like, we'll talk about why.
We could talk just about Batman for 30 minutes, but we probably shouldn't do that.
Right. And you said that these characters never change. Which I don't know if I agree with that, because change does happen, but it's happening a lot slower. There's, I would say, Iron Man 3. He has, you know, maybe it's Iron Man 2. He has PTSD, basically, right? Like, he goes and he carries that nuke into the wormhole in Avengers, and when he comes back down, they bring back the Winter Soldier in the Captain America movie, and that character is a totally different character.
That character, by the way, this is unrelated, I think, is the most boring character in all film. Like, we've had three movies now where we're supposed to believe that Captain America cares so much about Bucky, but Bucky is, right? Like, he's mean, and he's pissy, and he's uncharismatic, and he's not even a good-looking guy. I have no idea why we're supposed to believe that everyone cares so much about what happens to this one surly dude.
Wow. So,
with a robot arm.
For everybody listening at home, my sister is a huge Captain America fan, and I think she and Brian just became not friends.
No, I like Chris Evans, right? He's a movie star, man. He just exudes presence. I just wish they had cast someone else to be his best friend.
I disagree with that, because I think that change happens for these characters. It just happens very slowly. It happens in a timeline that should feel like bigger things are happening, right? You've got, when we see Iron Man, right, when we see Tony Stark, I would argue that he changes in that first movie. He goes from being an industrial military titan.
Yeah, they all change in the first movie. That's why they keep retelling origin stories.
Right.
Because the filmmakers want to have their characters change, and the only time you can do that with a superhero is their origin story.
Well, I think that there is the challenge, though, and I wonder if you'll feel differently when the Avengers franchise is finished, right? When this entire Marvel universe is finished and the characters, you know, from what I've heard from comic book spoilers, is that Captain America dies at some point, right? So there
I cannot imagine they will ever be. As long as they're making, see, they're not going to finish until they stop making money.
But here's the thing. This is the problem with the comic books, where no one is mortal. And that's part of the appeal. They exist in this, like, really safe space of consistency that people can find very comforting, because they can go back to it time and time and time again.
Yes.
And if they kill Captain America, they've killed him multiple times, apparently, they will bring him back. But there's the appeal for that. But you have what boils down to basically a Marxist critique for it, is that you think that they're products versus art.
Yeah, they absolutely are. And the same is true of comics, right? Like, when you look at, just like movies, and you look at, you know, I'm not a huge, huge comic person, but when you look at the comics that I think are interesting and culturally valuable and telling great stories, it's not Marvel and DC superhero comics, because those are IP content farms at this point, right? Like, they're not trying to tell the best possible story they can. They're trying to make sure that they continue to churn out stories of these particular characters because they are now worth so much to multimedia conglomerates.
But is there anything wrong with that? I will watch a very predictable, lighthearted narrative over what Batman versus Superman Justice League turned out to be.
Oh, it's the worst. Unwatchably bad.
And so for you, it was that falls into the same line. It isn't just that the Marvel movies tend to be a little bit lighter fare, and, you know, not dark enough, because Justice League was very dark, and still, I thought,
no,
the
and
worst
that's
movie.
Yeah, I'm not even looking for darkness, right? I'm just, and like, so the question you asked was, is that okay?
Yeah.
Of course it's okay, but when, like, you started this conversation off talking about the enormous cultural space these movies are taking up, right?
Yes.
Like, if you look at the, I don't know, top 10 grossing movies or before movies from 10 years ago, maybe 15 years ago, it was mostly new ideas. People, mm-hmm. filmmakers and actors saying, we have a story we want to tell, we have an idea we want to share. Now, it's probably, I don't have a list in front of me, but I bet it's 80% retreads. It's mm-hmm. 80. So the bulk of the resources that our enormous culture industry has is going to produce endless rehashes of these particular movies, because that's where the easy money is.
They're safe space narratives is kind of how I think of them, right? They exist in a way that doesn't really challenge people.
Yeah, totally.
They exist in a space where, you know, the appeal of superhero movies is that you can kind of go into a space where you can deny your mortality for a couple of hours, right? Iron Man is going to send the nuke up there, but he's going to come back down and everything's going to be okay. And eventually he will get back together with Pepper.
Yes.
And there is, even with the looming threat of whatever the big bad happens to be, there's always a very clear-cut good versus evil. So I understand, though, that that's part of the reason that I think these movies are so popular, though, is that they exist in this safe space. And this was in, you know, the first Iron Man came out in 2008, so this isn't necessarily a recent phenomenon, but I would say, what, in the past year, things have gone to shit, right? It's been pretty tense politically in the country. There's a lot of upheaval almost anywhere you look. So I would argue that people gravitate more towards these kinds of products because they need spaces that they can escape to without feeling constantly challenged.
Sure. But does it have to be so overwhelmingly... Does the bar have to be pushed so overwhelmingly to these gigantic cultural products that are not going to challenge, that are not going to tell an interesting story, that are not going to tell an original story, that are not going to convey any kind of idea? Like, one of the things that is great about comics, or any kind of literature of the fantastic, right? Comics mm-hmm. or science fiction or whatever you want to talk about, mm-hmm. is it has this enormous power of metaphor. You can say anything you want to say about the real world through a lens that people are going to care about and gravitate to, and you can make an idea simpler and more direct.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do that with superheroes. And there have been, like, great superhero stories told over the years in comics, because they've had 60 years to work on this stuff, and once in a while a good idea is going to break through. But I just object... It's not like any one movie I hate so much, although Batman vs. Superman was so terrible. I'm so angry. I'm still angry about how awful it was. And how, like, a 9-year-old could have fixed that movie. Sorry, what was I saying? Yes, so it's not that I'm angry about any one particular movie for the most part. It's
right.
the sheer, crushing, soul-deadening weight of all of them. And if 14-year-old me heard me being upset about the glut of superhero movies, they would be furious. But yeah, I want them to be... Once in a while, one of them is better, and I want more of them to be better.
Okay, so I want to wrap up the cultural studies trend, because I feel like what's happening with superhero movies now happened in the 30s and 40s with kind of the Depression happening, where you had a big influx of, like, Busby Berkeley style musicals,
yeah, or
right?
Westerns in the 60s and 70s.
A lot of people like entertainment for the way the world should be versus the way the world necessarily is. That is how I look at these Marvel movies, right? We see, even with Bucky, because we're in the middle of that Captain America trilogy, is that there's redemption for Bucky. He is pissy and he is boring and he is surly. And I have never said this to Pyle, but I will say it to you now.
Pyle, stop listening.
I don't think he was a very good friend to Steve in the first couple of scenes. I was like, I've never said this to her, but he does kind of just be like, all right, well, it's my last night in town, so I'm gonna go run off with these ladies, you know, which, like, meant to make it more, like, heteronormative, right?
Think about that. Right. Yes.
Right. Like, he's not, you know, that.
Yeah. Again.
Exactly.
Because these are cultural products. You cannot afford to offend a market segment. We
yes.
better bro them up a little bit.
Exactly. You got to bro them up. So that is my first argument against what you're saying, is that I completely agree that these are very safe movies, but we're in a time and space where people are so afraid of change that they want space. You still look skeptical.
Well, there's nothing wrong, you know, there's nothing wrong with vanilla ice cream. And if I went into the ice cream store and they had 20 flavors. Yeah. I would love to see vanilla there. But if I go in and all they have is vanilla,
yes.
I am unhappy about I'm happy about, A, my options, and I'm also unhappy about what the ice cream makers have been forced to do by the constraints of commerce.
I agree. Okay, I think that's great. It really boils down to how much cultural space they're taking up, which is a huge
amount.
All of it!
They're taking up all of it.
They're taking up all of it, and I'm buying it hook, line, and sinker because I think it's great.
Did you see Jupiter Ascending, the movie the Wachowskis did a couple years
Absolutely
ago?
Absolutely not.
Yeah, not a lot of people saw it, and it wasn't great.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to urge everybody, if anyone is listening, you should go watch Jupiter Ascending. For the sheer novelty of a big-budget sci-fi superhero smash-up movie that is not a brand exercise, that is not based on we have to introduce the characters and the people already like the characters and then we got to keep all the characters alive and no one can really change. The fact that somebody tried to do this, to make a new thing, which all the great movies of our youth, like mm-hmm. The Ghostbusters and Raiders of the Lost Ark and Close Encounters and all those things were original ideas. Mm-hmm. Like the Ghostbusters retread that became this, like, terrible war between the worst people. Like, I was forced to defend it against
right.
those people. But it wasn't really very good, and it wasn't very good. A fantastic cast, probably a better...
It was very funny.
It was very funny because those were really funny people.
Yes.
Why didn't they just put them in a new movie? They
right.
didn't do that because that might not have sold enough tickets. So
yes.
instead of doing something potentially great or potentially terrible with this amazing cast, they did something right down the middle, because right down the middle is... It's all like risk management at this point, because they're putting so many resources into these relatively few movies.
So you do think that some superhero movies are good?
All right, yeah. There are a couple... I was trying to think of exceptions to the rule, because I figured you would ask. I do think the Nolan films, certainly the first two,
okay.
are exceptions to the rule.
Okay.
And if you look at... So here's a great example in the terrible, unwatchably bad movie where Superman fights Batman.
Oh yeah, I forgot about it. We have to talk about why that sucks too.
It sucks in the way we're talking about them all sucking, but it sucks in its own purely artistic storytelling ways. It's just terrible. But they bring in Wonder Woman,
mm-hmm.
and the Wonder Woman movie is one of the best of the batch, right? Like
right.
she's ridiculously compelling. I'm not opposed to that character, but they stuck her in the movie for no good reason. It's this already bloated, ridiculous movie, and then there's like 20 minutes of this character who has nothing to do with the story. They stuck her in the movie because they wanted to introduce the new product line for the next set of movies. That was the sole reason why she's there.
It is a setup, right? They introduce Aquaman, they
yeah.
introduce the
one
Flash.
Where Batman basically watches the trailers for the upcoming movie. It's awful.
Yes.
But so look back at the Nolan movies, and like the second one, The Dark Knight.
Yes.
Which everyone loves the most. I think the first one's a little better, but they're both great. So the second one, you could argue, suffers from having two villains, right? You have the Joker, and everyone loves Heath Ledger's performance in that character. Then you have Two-Face, right? Oh, we've mm-hmm. got these, you know, the Joker-Batman duality is so central to the story, and it's great, and it's really compelling on film. Does it need the second villain? And you could argue whether it does or not, but you would be arguing a creative choice.
Okay.
Did Nolan put Two-Face in the movie, or did the screenwriter, I don't know who that was, I feel terrible, I should know, did they put the second villain in the movie because they thought it was going to do something good or be interesting? Whether they failed or succeeded was a creative decision.
Right.
But Snyder didn't put Wonder Woman in the movie
right.
as a creative decision. He
right.
put it in as a marketing decision.
Well, they already made that as a Justice League franchise, right? Like, that everything now has to be a franchise. Like, it has
yeah,
to
has
have
to be
sequel potential.
Right, and that's what's so terrible about all this garbage, that it's all that stuff. The needs of commerce vastly outweigh any possible need of art or storytelling.
Grant, I do think that the needs of commerce often outweigh the value of art, because people gotta live, you know, people have to make money. But
the Nolan films made $1 billion.
Yes, I was gonna say the exception for the Nolan films is that they succeeded in that fine line of this is actually good art.
Do you know what I like so much about Batman Begins?
Tell me.
So, you know, you literally cannot think of a cultural figure with more weight than Batman. Like,
mm-hmm.
like I said, my mom knows everything about Batman. She's never read a Batman.
I would argue Superman. Like, 100%.
No, like, I would maybe give a tie to those two.
Wow.
But what I think is great about the first Batman movie is it's the only Batman movie, or the only Batman anything I think of, where the character they're telling a story about is Bruce Wayne. Batman's not the character. He's the weird schizophrenic thing that Bruce Wayne does at night.
It goes back to your original point of the origin story is really the only space that you can...
Yeah, that's why they keep making, like, the Spider-Man and Fantastic Four movies. We've
over
had
and
it over and
over again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I did like the new Spider-Man movie because they don't tell the origin story. They just, like, Every single person walking into the theater already knows who Spider-Man
is.
They just assume it, and it's fine.
That's exactly what we said when we left. I'm like, I generally hate Spider-Man. He is my least favorite because of all the time they spend just explaining, oh.
Yes, Christ, I know. The Spider-Bit and Uncle Ben.
I've been around, I know. And I love that they dispense with it. They just assume that you know.
The X-Men movies, are they Fox?
But those movies are, they've gone downhill. The first one
I feel like they're
great.
The exact same as the Marvel stuff, right? They're Marvel characters, but they're not Marvel movies.
Characters, but not movies.
They're the same thing, right? There's a couple bright spots, but mostly they're just giant cultural product exercises.
They are, and I would argue that at least Marvel tries a little bit harder, and the bottom line being what the bottom line always is, which is that they need to make as much money as possible.
They don't need to make as much money as possible. They are optimizing their products to make as much money as possible.
Okay, but I would say that the Marvel movies actually do a better job.
Yes.
Of at least trying to hide that.
Once you throw story away, the only thing left of a movie is technical execution, and the Marvel movies have much better technical execution in general than their rivals.
What about Logan?
I think Logan is an exception to the rule, and did you see Logan?
I have seen Logan.
Yeah, it's great. I loved it.
I loved it.
And one of the reasons why I loved it is because, so Wolverine, he's not Batman or Superman, but he's, everybody who watches these movies knows who this character is. What's his name?
Right. Hugh Jackman.
Yeah, he's been playing him for like 17 years. He's great.
He's great.
Patrick Stewart's great. The acting is high quality, but the commercial stakes are really low, right? Like, I don't know how this happened, but they set out to make a different kind of movie. They obviously gave the filmmaker freedom. It had an R rating, so they've already abandoned their, you know, whoever their giant target market is for these things. Mm-hmm. And you can see why that makes a much better movie, because the characters are free to suffer consequences.
Mm-hmm.
Like, spoiler alert, Wolverine dies. But which would never have happened in sort of the core movies, because he would just be instantly resurrected. But whether he died or not, the fact that he is, and Professor X too, the fact that they are changing and they are suffering consequences and facing consequences as a result of the story we're seeing about them.
Right.
That's what makes that a great movie in a way that these others are not great.
Well, but you're saying that because that it was divorced from those corporate considerations, or because it was...
I think it seems to me like it was largely divorced from those corporate considerations. It does not seem to have been placed in the same marketing space. Mm-hmm. I think they decided they could afford to do this one different thing. And, you think you mentioned sort of the first Guardians movie, to me, is this, like, I think that is a, and I just saw the second one, and it's fine, it's all right. But I think the second one is, the first one.
I didn't like it.
The stakes were low.
Didn't like it.
You didn't like the first one?
They're not my favorite Marvel movies at all. And
I think the first one isn't even a Marvel movie, right? Like, it's technically one.
Technically
but it doesn't
one.
Feel like one, because they're not trying to connect it.
Right.
Then it was like a runaway hit, because it was interesting, and had a point of view, and it was a good story. And like, oh, we got to connect this to the brand machine. And the second one suffers from that, because you can see, like, they're making all the connections, and I was expecting Iron Man to walk in at any minute. Which some people are like, oh my God, it would have been so great if Iron Man walked in. But no, that would have been everything that is wrong with this whole giant culture machine.
See, I don't think it's wrong.
Wrong! It's a betrayal of art!
So part of the interesting aspect of Guardians that I really liked, that I think that I wish they had kind of gotten deeper into, is that this kid is an orphan, right? And Marvel kind of tends to take a lighter approach to these things, which I really, and that's one of the reasons I liked Logan Lucky, is because they went right into, like, this is bleak, right?
Yes,
they went right into this is mortality, this is people growing old, this is the antithesis of the regular superhero
movie. But it's
movie.
Still a superhero movie. Like, you couldn't have told that exact same story about, like, a regular guy.
It's about the demise of a superhero.
Yeah, he's still, like, his powers and losing them and how he copes with that.
Yes, which is not what people want to go into a movie theater to see. I mean, basically, it is a movie about somebody growing old. Like, that's exactly what it is.
Yes. And I don't think it's, like, I don't think it's good because, like, oh, this is the one good one because it's super bleak. I think those things are not necessarily related.
No, but in the context of what we generally see, it is
very different.
It's very different, right, which makes it very good. With Guardians, I think part of my problem is kind of Chris Pratt. He just plays have you seen Parks and Rec?
Yeah, in fact, I would say Chris Pratt betrayed a lot of men like me when because before he was like charming and good looking and people loved him, but he was, a normal shaped guy.
Yeah.
And now and there's a scene in the new movie where he takes off his shirt for no good reason and he's like, mother effing, and he's just chiseled.
Every time I see him though, I just see him as Burt Macklin. Like, I don't think he can escape the Burt Macklin-ness of the character.
I feel like he's achieved escape velocity from Burt Macklin.
Okay.
He's a movie star now. One thing I do think was great about the Marvel movies is that they didn't have that. Like, DC has the Batmans, the Supermans, the Wonder Womans, like these characters that people's grandmothers understand who these people are. Mm-hmm. Marvel doesn't really have that. And they had to kind of dig down into, like, nobody knew who Iron Man or Black Widow were 9 years ago, and now everyone knows who they are. So they went to these kind of, like, backbench comic book characters and just forced them into being these huge cultural figures they are now. They managed to insert some genuine pathos with the Hulk, Mark Ruffalo playing the Hulk.
Like, that's a fantastic,
all those scenes are great, yeah.
That's a fantastic casting choice.
Yeah, he's fantastic in it, and you really get... And, the thing that I think is really great about that character and that portrayal is that, like, he's so... He has so much, like, loathing and terror of this thing. Like,
right.
And that's something, like you genuinely feel like the Hulk is this destructive force. And you get that more from Mark Ruffalo's performance than from any 10 scenes where the Hulk is smashing CGI buildings. Right,
yeah.
Chris Evans as Captain America is, like, he's so lovable, right? Like, you just...
It's
such a cheese ball.
I don't like him.
You don't like him, really? Oh, Pyle, stop listening again.
For me, the Captain America movies are very, very slow and very, very boring. And I feel the same way. I love Chris Evans as, like, a person when he steps out of Captain America. I think he's funny and he's charming. And the whole Captain America character, I know he's supposed to be kind of stiff and like, hey.
Yeah, but I think Chris Evans pulls that off in a way that I bet is really hard to pull off.
I'm probably not giving him the credit.
You don't think he pulls it off.
Right? I'm not giving him the credit he deserves because I think it has to be kind of hard to you know... You guys can't see me, but I was trying to imitate Chris Evans standing. Like, you've got to be very
stiff. I can't see him, and I didn't get that at all. I'm surprised that's what you were trying to do.
But he's very stiff. He's not my favorite. It's Iron Man, 100%.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, he's great.
And that's an interesting character, and he has a great take on it, and he's a fantastic actor.
And I disagree with you. I think he evolves quite a bit. I think he becomes a humanist, as these movies.
No, he doesn't evolve at all. He's exactly the same.
I don't believe you.
If anything, really, Tony Stark is really a war criminal, if we wanted to really, like, address him in normal terms.
All right, we're going to wrap this up. So you're basically frustrated with the studio system as it exists these days.
Yes. And I understand that, the economics have changed and people don't watch movies, so they're putting all of their eggs in these giant baskets, and they feel like they cannot afford for the baskets to leak, and therefore the baskets cannot afford to be in new shape.
All right. Well, next time, hopefully, we'll have some better baskets to talk about. But Brian, thanks for being on the show.
Do you want to do a show about baskets? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, basket weaving next time.
I got nothing there.
Next time.
I have enjoyed our conversation. I don't feel that you are right about most of these things, but I appreciate the perspective.
All right. You can catch Brian on Twitter at Brian_Minter.
That's right. That's me.
Okay. And I'm at Hem Javeri, HemJhaveri. Thanks for listening.